Welcome to Hollywood Ungagged, the Peter Parker of Political Podcast. Season 3, Episode 8, we're back. Regular content getting delivered straight into your ears. I'm your host, David McClement, transmitting from the Blantyre Free State. And joining me today is my eternal comrade, Deborah Torrens. And how are you, Deborah? Struggling in the heat, I hear.
I have a nice bright red, and it's not the sunburn. It's just the extremely continuously warm temperature. I can't deal.
Yeah, we're recording a wee bit later in the week than we normally do because we were all melting at puddles on Monday when we normally record. So hopefully Deborah gets editing quickly and we get it out in the normal sort of time. That was kind of snide. Deborah, sorry.
I was thinking,
and
they bother, David.
It's a wee
head there. Just told you I'm melting to the inside out.
You called me the boss a minute ago, so it's meant to take my heat. No. Also joining us, returning from his jet-setting lifestyle, it's the return of the Pizza Hut Prince, Mr. Brian Finlay.
Hello.
Brian, good to see you again.
So nice to be back. Lovely to be amongst fabulous comrades like yourselves.
Seeing if Brian's back, this is probably a good time any that Brian's actually going to be leaving Hollywood at the end of this season. Mm-hmm. So if he's your favourite, then you've got a few more episodes to enjoy him. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you still keep listening when it's me, Deborah, and to be confirmed.
See, if you're a real fan of mine, you would keep supporting Hollywood when I'm not here. But it'll be an extended leave. I'll be back at some point, I'm sure. I mean, you can do a wee guest, you never know.
I thought you were going to say, if you're a real fan of mine, you'll stop watching immediately.
Love it.
I really like the sound of that new guy, Toby Confirmed. I think that'll be my new drag king name.
That's absolutely fantastic.
That is a pretty good name, Toby Confirmed.
Sorry, somebody's drag racing outside your window.
Zooming past. Of course, the windies are open because it's Welton.
Absolutely,
which is on the agenda. But first up, I thought we'd get into the latest in the Tory leadership round.
Excuse me. What? You forgot the thing I said you were to say, because you didn't say it last
week. Didn't say it last week. Sorry. So much for me being the boss. Clearly, Deborah's the real boss. Let's get ungagged.
Woo!
And it was nice to hear you smile. Dream a dream, because you'll never die. Stars will never overtake the sky. Life has its turns and it takes a while. And it was nice, nice to hear you smile.
Okay, first up, Tory leadership latest. The field has whittled down to 5, and we had three head-to-head debates last week amongst the contenders. It's since been whittled down to 3, and by the time this goes out, we will know the final 2. But I thought we'd discuss the debates and see what everybody thought about the different characters and their contributions. Brian, since you're back, why don't you kick us off?
Kick us off.
What was your initial thoughts? And I take it you did watch the debate.
I did.
There was 3 of them. I managed 2 out of the 3. I didn't manage the third one.
It's pretty horrendous, isn't it? And it's really just like the worst choice of. I mean, there is no happy ending. There is no positivity that's going to come out of this Tory leadership. I mean, you had Tom Tugendhat, who was like trying to be the sort of like outlier, like Boris Johnson's a liar and blah blah blah. And we're like, and how do people get applauded in studios for just telling the truth? Like, this is where we're at. Like, you know. Do you think Boris Johnson's a truthful man? The answer is no. We know that answer. And everyone else is sort of dancing around it, not wanting to, you know, stick the boot into the current Prime Minister. And then, of course, he's like, no. And then everyone just goes, yay! And you think, is this where we're at?
He must have been so glad that he... I mean, obviously, I think there was discussions about that answer because, you know, that would have been a kind of awkward one as to whether he put the boot in like that. He must have been so happy they came to him last there because he had the other four sort of, you know, trying to mince the words and he was like, no. It made him look like the straight talker.
Yeah, because, I mean, are any of them truthful? I mean, loads of people like to be very creative with the outcomes and policy and whatnot. But yeah, it's just not inspiring at all. It's actually a concern. It's really, really quite worrying about, because whoever ends up, you know, being in the final two, and then it goes to the Tory membership, we'll have no say in that. We've no say who's going to be the next Prime Minister. And I think that, and I've been speaking to a few people about this, it's these debates are, I don't think, particularly helpful, because it sort of paints an illusion of a democratic process when actually we're not in a democratic process. And we're basically just observers. And that,
exactly,
if you think about it, is horrendous, like really, really bad. And I understand we've got a parliamentary democracy and all these different things, but I mean, there is going to be no consent. That this Prime Minister, whoever it's going to be, is just going to be undermined with that very point for the next 2 years. You don't have a mandate, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, like Gordon Brown was sort of taunted for not calling a general election. So we're just going to waste another 2 years of back and forths and not really having much trust. I mean, if it's Liz Truss or Rishi Sunak, which is likely to be in the final two, there's been sort of like scenario polling done, and it's not going to read, like, you know, for the Tories, it's not going to bring their polling back to where it was before all the sort of drama kicked off. So, which is a great thing, but basically we're just going to limp on for another 2 years and basically wait on a general election and then pick another terrible candidate or one that's just not that great either. So it's not really very exciting, is it?
How many of the debates did you manage to get through?
Well, I did start watching the first debate and then I fell asleep after about 5 minutes. I did fully intend to watch the second debate, but I didn't. And then I did watch the third one. Tugendhat came across to me as did I say that right?
No, who's Tugendhat?
I don't know, is that not his name?
Tugendhat.
Tugendhat. Tugendhat. Right, sorry. I'm so sorry. Exactly. He was trying to come across as cool, the cool dad. That's the vibes I got off him. And if I heard one more time about him serving in the front lines, that really annoyed me. Anyway, I keep having a premonition about Liz Truss. I'm having such a hard time.
Another drag queen then.
I keep having premonitions of Liz Truss doing an acceptance speech of the leadership, and it's terrifying me because it's sort of in my dream state. She's actually Margaret Thatcher. I don't know if you've seen that image. I tweeted it where she's...
five different pictures where she's clearly trying to steal Thatcher's...
It's the exact outfit, which is just funny.
Hug a coup, ride a tank, wear a big massive bow tie in your blouse.
It makes me think of one of these celebrity magazines that like steal the look.
That was it. Who wore it better? Exactly. I'm no fan of Rishi Sunak. I think he's a really well-polished turd. I don't know what else to call him. Like, he's got all the right catchphrases, obviously getting all the, you know, proper advice, and he's just so shiny with it. Like, I almost seem like an American sort of TV host. I don't know why.
Yeah, I thought he came across like quite light, like intellectually very lightweight, and I kind of felt as if he switched between an overexcited morning show DJ and like a precocious student that's getting his big chance to ask the panel something, question thing.
Like that sort of wide-eyed, oh, we can do anything, you know, like...
And so rehearsed, like everything was so false, feeling
I seen somebody had tweeted that they thought that Sunak reminded them of people that ran for head boy at school. And like, bring ketchup back to the canteens. casual Fridays.
Chips.
But that is his vibe, isn't it? Bad enough, what a shame, not transphobic horror. Sorry, I was pleased to see the back of that. Because yesterday I tweeted, Badenoch is eliminated. Somebody said, it escalated quickly. So I'm being very harsh. No, Kemi Badenoch was not a great candidate. I did not like any of the things she had to say. And I am pleased that she was knocked out of the leadership race, not physically. The Mordaunt. Did I say that right? I'm glad, because I was calling her Mordor. She is competently crap, isn't she? Like, that. I know that's almost an oxymoron, but absolutely none of these candidates are willing to overturn any of the previous cabinet's policies. Like, none of the choices that were made in the previous administration that are causing all these problems that they're going to fix with tax cuts, all these millions of tax cuts, and all this money they're going to give to people. How can they do that without reversing some of the policy choices? They can't. They're all talking shit. And as you said, it's an illusion of democracy. We don't care. We're watching this like Love Island. Really, we are just observers in a box, and the box is a Tory box.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think you can phone and vote in Love Island.
Oh, maybe. Can you?
I don't know. I've never seen it, but I'm just assuming it's someone like Big Brother and stuff. No.
Look at us trying to be the cool dad.
Look at him.
making relevant TV commentary. We don't even watch it.
Kemi Badenoch, I thought she came across like she was been interviewed for like an assistant manager job at Tesco or something. Like, her answers, I thought, sound... I mean, I suppose technically this kind of is like an interview, but I thought her answers sounded like somebody who was sitting getting grilled by a panel in an interview situation. I didn't feel as if she projected any kind of charisma or leadership or anything like that. It was just sort of like, yes, a situation where I showed good leadership, but like just, she did not look like a leader, putting aside it's a horrific politics.
It was the thing she was saying out of the sort of focus of being in the leadership that was terrifying me about Badenoch.
Yeah, I think that like at her launch campaign, she'd put stickers on gender neutral toilets to make them men and women's toilets. I mean, people on the right talk about virtue signaling, right? That is like the most, somebody literally put like, I don't know, like masking tape on the door and just wrote men and women.
What's the opposite of a virtue?
That's too challenging. Unvirtuous.
I'm googling it.
A sin,
because we're coming up with another really good name for the podcast there. Unvirtuous signaling.
Unvirtuous.
Vice, according to Google.
Vice signaling.
Vice signaling.
See, that's basically what it is. You know, it's like, oh, this is my belief, so basically I'm going to prevent a venue from having toilets that anyone can use. That's how ridiculous it is. Like, I'm going to actually make sure that mask and tape goes on those doors so we can have a binary in the toilets in this venue. That's literally what that is. It's just the most bizarre thing to do. And of course... It was to kind of goad the right sort of people on Twitter and whatever, and obviously it got a rise. So, you know, but I just thought, like, yeah, I think it's more what you were saying, that it's the things that she was saying when she wasn't being interviewed or being in a debate. It was more these sort of things that were happening, and you think, red flag.
It's like you get a kind of lazy transphobia for people who are just kind of like, well, what do we need to change? Like, why do we need to know people's pronouns or change what we've always used? And I sort of like, you know, bigotry of momentum. Whereas to somebody that actually goes out the effort, there's already gender neutral toilets, and goes out the effort to change it specifically, that's a different kind of nasty.
Yes.
You know, kind of led us down a dead end there.
That's all right. Can we make predictions on who we think's going to be in the final two then?
What we could do is we'll just say a few different scenarios, and then you cut in the one that was supposed to come out to be true.
No, and I'm going to edit this at the moment. It's fine.
And I think it's tonight is the final vote to get into the last two.
I don't know who the last two.
Because obviously, you know, recording Tom Tugendhat, who I thought he was like, he got a bit better, I thought, as it went on, but he was like Tory bingo in his opening statement. So we believe in Britain. I love this country. Thatcher, Churchill, the armed forces. I served. You know, it's just like, okay, mate, we get it. You're in shouting house within the first 5 minutes. Set that up.
It's very true.
But so he's already gone. Kenny Badenoch then went in the next vote, and I think it is her supporters and where they go. Well, are going to make a difference, and considering they're likely to be some of the most extreme right-wing members of the parliamentary Tory party.
Mm-hmm.
That's a scary thought. But my prediction, you know, starting
last week when I was looking at it is that her supporters will probably go more to Liz Truss, and that will put Liz Truss in the top two and probably push out Penny Mordaunt, which, considering she's the heavy favourite, the polling and all the head-to-heads said she would beat anybody. I could see Rishi Sunak supporters try to calculate whether a few of them switching to Liz Truss would be worth it to make sure it's, you know, Sunak versus Truss in the final two, which I think Truss, I think Sunak would win that. Liz Truss came across as more competent than I expected, I'll be honest. You know, the bar, the bar was low. The bar was very low, but I thought actually she done all right and came across, you know, as somebody who has held bloody one of the great offices of state. You know, it's ridiculous that competence shocked me. But I think Sunak will get it.
Do you think it'll be Sunak? I think that the final two will be Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, based on what you were saying as well with the supporters. Because basically, because this is so undemocratic, we're basically talking about how MPs are going to game the system to get somebody that their favourite could potentially beat the other candidate. So this is just getting further and further and further away from any sort of democracy or fairness.
I was just going to say, they did that before the Tory party, remember?
Yes, they did, yeah.
They basically... to screw over Portillo, who was a heavy favourite when the sort of campaign first started. And I think it was Ian Duncan-Smith. Yeah, I think it was when Ian Duncan-Smith won, I think a lot of his supporters switched because they knew he would get in. They switched to Kenneth Clark because they knew the membership would probably elect Ian Duncan-Smith ahead of Ken Clark because he's sort of pro-European and more sort of liberal by Tory standards. Really. So they have formed from doing that.
I think that's where we're going to end up. But I actually think Truss is going to beat Rishi Sunak with the membership.
You think Truss will win it?
I think that Rishi Sunak is deeply unpopular with the membership, just based on what I've kind of been reading and what I can see and what my vibe's telling me. Because Rishi Sunak, well, both of these candidates were really close to Boris Johnson, so that sort of dynamic completely gets thrown away because one was Foreign Secretary, one was Chancellor. So that sort of like, oh, they were too close to Boris Johnson, whereas if Penny Mordaunt had got into the final two, she would be elected because she's not really been seen as a sort of Boris Johnson, like sort of groupie as such in the past parliament. So I think that she would have completely walked it. But I just have got a feeling, like Deborah's got, that Liz Truss is going to be the next prime minister. And see, if you had told me when I watched that video about pork markets that she genuinely would be the next prime minister, I really don't know. What would have happened there?
From the Tories' point of view, I think Penny Mordaunt would be their best option.
Yeah, and I could see her being quite a player in Prime Minister's questions and these types of things. Like you were saying, a lot of the things she said is really superficial. There's not a lot of detail. She's actually saying that now is not the time for me to set out detail, but you're on a debate to become the next Prime Minister. And she's saying things like, it's not the time to put detail forward and blah, blah, blah. So it's a lot easier for her to switch positions, which obviously there's been a lot of discussion around her position on supporting trans people or whatever. So I think that Penny Mordaunt would actually be a good player in Prime Minister's questions versus Keir Starmer and things like that, but there wouldn't be a lot of substance there. And perhaps it's been Prime Ministers like that don't have a lot of substance that seem to just sort of glide along.
That's it. If you're a Tory Prime Minister, doesn't need substance because they don't get the same scrutiny.
Exactly.
I think it will be between Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak because, as you said, Penny Mordaunt is sort of comes across as will be semi-competent and will win against Sunak. And I think the thing that's scary about that situation is Liz Truss then might get in because Rishi Sunak, under any sort of scrutiny, as was shown in the third debate when Liz Truss was sort of cast in, and it was like, oh, this is shady, having wee digs at him. I thought to some, you know, the Tory members, that might be appealing. They might be like, well, she can stand up to people. Mm-hmm. And she kept saying that thing, oh, I was brought up in Yorkshire. I was told, I speak how it is, shovel's a shovel or whatever she was fucking saying. But then I was reading she was also brought up in Paisley and in Leeds. I like that.
Said,
that was
she said that, Matt, when she said that she grew up in Paisley, I was like, is it another Paisley? don't try to blame us, you know, we have a responsibility for her.
Although, to be fair, it's Paisley in it.
All our thousands of listeners in Paisley just switched off. Thanks, Taylor. Yeah.
I actually love Paisley, so it's got really, really good charity shops, and it's got a really nice Abbey.
That sounded so snide.
But it's not, because I love charity shops.
I try to backtrack now.
No, it's actually true. Actually, at one point, Glenn and I used to travel around some of the towns in central Scotland just to go and have a look at the charity shops, and that's a fact.
Mulgay's got good charity shops.
Is that, I've never actually been to Mulgay for charity shopping, so I'll come and hit you up sometime.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I don't know, let's say that I watched the Conservative Home debate, mm-hmm. which was like the one that was like sort of online, mainly because I thought it was a BBC debate when I put it on YouTube, and I was halfway through and I thought, wait a minute, why aren't they actually sitting at podiums next to each other? But then I thought I might as well finish it. They asked them what their greatest weakness was, just like an interview. Did you see this?
No. I didn't watch that Conservative Home one.
What do you think Kimmy Badenoch thought her greatest weakness was?
Was it anything to do with working in McDonald's? Because that seems to come up a lot.
No, she's too funny.
That is funny.
It comes across as the most miserable, unappealing person that I think I've ever seen. I'm just too humorous. With this pure, you know, serious face. I just rip out you, hen. Your hilarity.
What was the others?
Rishi Sunak, which I think his was.
Too handsome.
He just works too hard. Just works too hard for the British people. That's, I mean, these questions were fucking awful. Liz Truss.
Pork markets.
Too enthusiastic.
Well, actually, that's fair. I think she's
great. Well, pork markets and British apples.
Oh, breaking news. Breaking news. Sunak and Truss are the final two.
Hold it.
And that literally was breaking news, has just come through now. I got the update. There was 8 votes in it, apparently. Ooh. This is breaking, so you'll have to bear with us, team.
Oh, my goodness.
Sunak got 137, Truss got 113, Mordaunt got 105. So it was very close.
Well, there we go. We were right. I still think Sunak will probably win the head, but we'll see. The last two answers for the greatest weaknesses. Penny Mordaunt tried to take, I don't know what she was going for with this question. She's got too many cats, which I don't think counts as a character weakness. He tried to kind of make it all jokey and say, so I don't know if Larry, the Downing Street cat, is going to be too happy if she moves in with 3 or 4 cats, whatever she's got. And Tom Tugginhat, you could predict his. It's like, if you don't guess it, it'll be like so obvious to you when I say
Is it easy too regimented?
Oh, that would have been a better answer. He loves the army too much. He's just too into the army. It's just so great.
And this is the thing, actually, when it comes to Tom, that after the ITV debate, which was the one where everyone started sort of like basically pulling shade on each other, he did actually tweet, and I did laugh. It's the first time I've ever laughed at a Tory. And he's like, I don't know if you know, but basically I used to be in the army or something like that, along those lines. And I just thought that was really funny. It did make me laugh, because obviously he had mentioned it quite possibly about 6 or 7 times throughout this debate. So at least he's aware that maybe that was just a bit much.
They always talk about that question in interviews, and they always say, like, you know, try to be honest. Don't like say something that's really a strength. 5 of them, none of them actually say their real weakness. You know, oh, I'm too funny, I work too hard, I'm too enthusiastic, and I love the army too much. And I don't know what to say about the cat answer, but, you know, there we go.
Yeah, but we'll not have to worry about that now, will we?
Yep. Cheerio, Penny.
Bye, Penny. It's like a bad penny.
Oh.
Ding. So we'll just have to wait and see who's going to be the next Prime Minister. But of course, we don't have any say in that. There's no democratic process for us to choose. So we'll just have to observe.
No, it's the choice of the next Prime Minister were made by some 150,000 mostly bitter, bigoted pensioners. I think that's the sort of general demographics of the Tory party. Next topic this week, we'll discuss the ongoing heatwave that I'm sure all our UK listeners are very aware of. The UK could have its hottest day on record this week, with temperatures forecast to hit up to 41 degrees. The Met Office has issued a red extreme heat warning on Monday and Tuesday in much of England, with amber warnings in place in Wales and parts of Scotland. So why are we seeing such brutal temperatures? Most climate scientists say the answer is climate change. Deborah.
Yes, we had a record set in Scotland yesterday, 34.8 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even sound real, does it? I mean, when I was wee, 18 degrees was a roasting hot day. I know everybody says, oh, there was heat waves back in the 70s, but it was more just a prolonged period of dryness and warmth. It wasn't this excruciating heat that we just don't have our infrastructure designed for. All our houses are designed to retain heat because it's usually freezing or raining. So to try and keep cool in this heat is unbelievable. And as a disabled person and somebody who, as aforementioned, can't really regulate their own body temperature, I am struggling so unbelievably. There's only so much cold water you can drink, I think, before you're consuming too much. I feel for the wildlife, for people that are working in this. We don't have any sort of legislation in place, I don't think, to cover that, do we? Like, I know if you work in a building site, you've got to have access to sunscreen and stuff like that, or you work outdoors, but we don't really have anything about people have to stop and rest and cool down in extreme temperatures. That's maybe something we need to look at as
I think if there is any, it's more worrying about low temperatures. Traditionally, that would be more an issue.
Mm-hmm. The legislation in this country is really vague when it comes to temperature at work. So it says that the employer has to provide a place of work that has a reasonable temperature. So what is reasonable? Well, we don't actually know because the legislation doesn't state that. If you are in the US, your indoor workplace has to be lower than 24 degrees. If you're in Spain, I think it's 26, 27, something like that. So there's already legislation out there that we could use and adapt to fit, you know, for our climate. But obviously this Conservative government will not do that, because then that will, you know, basically give people rights. I mean, who wants to do that? So yeah, we definitely do need that legislation in place, because you've got, you know, basically, like you were saying, like you yourself, you struggle like regulating your body temperature, and there's so many other people out there that do that, that have the similar issue. And children and babies are like that too, so they find it really difficult to regulate. Elderly folk. And we can kind of hark back a little bit to the conversations we're having around COVID, that it's basically the people that the Tories don't really care about. So, you know, we won't, they won't really make any change to benefit these people, because we've seen how their policies have played out in the past. But yeah, I completely agree that we do need to have legislation in for workers, but I don't see it happening under this government, and I probably don't see it happening under Labour either. So here we go.
No, I've been reminded of a conversation I had with a friend of mine years ago. He was a joiner, so he worked on a lot of building sites, and he'd been to Australia and got a bit of experience with some of these issues in Australia compared to here. And he was saying how there was rules about low temperature in building sites, and a lot of that is not really based on the workers. They said it's based on things like, you know, low temperatures, the cement doesn't work properly or whatever. I'm not a tradesman, so sorry if I'm not technical here. But what he was saying was, if the temperature hits a certain level in Australia, it's automatically, the site shuts down.
Chills down.
Mm-hmm. All the workers sent home, but they don't lose any money. But he says here, he says, you see guys like trying to pretend it's warmer than it is, because if it does get too cold, then they shut down. They're out of money. They're out of pocket. Mm-hmm.
And the fear that if the Tories do take any action, you know, it's more likely than that route. I'm not going to draft legislation that's favourable to the workers over the employers.
On another angle, just a bit legislation, see in Canada, if the big tree, the lumber, what are they called? Forest, the big forests where they cut down trees for lumber. See if the humidity and the temperature comes to a point where they overlap, where it's so dry and so hot that if wildfires can start, mm-hmm. then all their work is also shut down. So here it is, was evidenced by what happened in London. Don't know if you saw that in the Borough of Kent. Because of how dry it was, a fire got out of hand. Mm-hmm. We're attending 10 fires right across the borough, and it was mm-hmm. a major incident. Maybe we have to start looking at those sort of things, because mm-hmm. we've seen some crazy big fires over in, like, over at West Loch Lomond.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that is, it blocks off whole communities because there's only single roads in and out of Argyll in some mm-hmm. place. Like, we know what it's like when there's a landslide and they've got to go through the big detour right around Glencoe. The other point, just briefly, I wanted to touch on was other legislation could be, we've got hardly any shade in mm-hmm. our communities. I know this is a big green policy, but we really need to be planting more trees and stuff that can help provide shelter for people and residents, and also mm-hmm. the wildlife. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of stuff about wildlife suffering in this heat as well. The thing with climate change is it really does affect every single person. The people living in the frontline communities where sea levels rise, and people like us that are just trying to get about your day. And yet I am melting, as you can see. Look, I'm getting redder and redder.
As time goes by. No, it's true. And just to really echo pretty much what you said, I think you've covered it really well and really concisely, is that we've got these, like, you know, there was that video of this train in Spain that had stopped and there was wildfires on both sides of the line. It's happening. People can see it. Yet you've still got absolute clangers on Twitter being like, oh, it's 36 degrees in Greece today and nobody's going on about it. Well, actually, I can't even remember who it was, but it was some moron anyway. And he was like, oh, it's 36 degrees in Greece and nobody's going on about it. And then he had a picture of him at the beach. And then somebody had responded to it saying, I'm from Athens. And if you want to come down and actually experience how hot it is here and basically how hot all the buildings get and you know, all the issues that we have with our infrastructure, then maybe you'll experience it a little better. If you're on holiday and you're not having to go to work, you're not having to dress a particular way, you're not having to go about your day, you've not got errands to run, you've not got caring to provide, all these different things, that's different. And generally, if you go to Spain on holiday, there's loads of places to sit in the shade and dip in the pool because they're built for it. They understand mm-hmm. these are what people need. And when you're talking about shade and trees and things like that, if you look at the amount of trees that have been removed by councils across Scotland and right across the UK, there was a really famous case in Sheffield. There was a case in Sheffield where basically the Labour Council was just removing loads of trees for no real reason because it was saving them money because they didn't have to prune them.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually had a really backfire because so many people then voted Green. So that was one of the big surges in Sheffield with the Green. And that was one of the main policies that they stood on, saying they were going to stop doing this and they were actually going to plant more trees. And we definitely do need, because trees are natural. They're natural shade as well. It's not, you're not having to build big concrete structures and things like that. And there's so many other benefits that come with having trees in cities. It's just, I don't understand why we don't do it.
On the flip side, having no trees exacerbates flooding, mm-hmm. which, you know, we also are having troubles with come the westerly winds. I think it's, you touched very briefly on a point there as well, transport.
Mm-hmm.
Our transport network isn't made for this weather. There was trains being cancelled, buses being cancelled, flights being cancelled. I mean, flights being cancelled, that's probably good for the environment, but
mm-hmm.
the rest of it's a pain in the arse for people trying to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get to work, we can't even get a cold drink out of a fridge.
Exactly. And also if you talk about, you know, basically how terrible our public transport system is, because it is terrible, so loads of people drive to work. And of course, if you end up in a standstill on a motorway when it's, you know, 35 degrees and all this pollution is just spurting out, when it's at higher temperatures, it's more problematic for the environment as well. So basically, decisions that have been made when it comes to transport, whether it be, you know, trees in our cities and all these different things, is around either saving money or making it convenient for individuals who have got, you know, the luxury of having access to a car and things like that to get around. And it's not for people who need good, sustainable and cheap public transport.
I mean, you're saying you've seen idiots on Twitter coming out with this. I mean, I've seen newsreaders coming out with this. You know, when people were comparing it to the Netflix film Don't Look Up, when mm-hmm. the scientists are trying to warn about a meteor coming, and, you know, like, they want to joke about, you know, oh, can I hit my ex-wife's house? And I've seen stuff very reminiscent of that. Like, they'll talk, but look, it's lovely, it's nice, bright and warm, isn't it? And it was some scientist that they had on, I think it was GB News,
mm-hmm.
and they were like almost trying to bully him into saying that it's fine. And he's like, well, you know, it is nice. I'm sitting in my garden. I'm in the shade. It's lovely, but, you know, it's not okay. You know, the place is on fire. We're experiencing record temperatures. And then the presenter was like, what about the summer of 1976? You know, that was a heat wave and it was blah, blah, and it was fine. And he's like, well, that was a one-off, you know. And also, it's record temperatures means it is by definition hotter than it was in 1976.
Yeah.
So this summer that was so extreme that people are talking about it over 40 years later is not as hot as we're experiencing almost regularly now.
And the thing is, it's like, see, even if you are you're a climate change denier, or you're, you know, a bit skeptical around it and things like that, well, why would you not just want to reduce carbon emissions anyway? Because there's so many direct impacts on things like the natural environment and animals and our way of life and things like that. And it's that great sort of image that says, you know, what if we done all this preparation for climate change and all we created was a better planet anyway? And it's like, it's just honestly, it's just wild.
I mean, I think I've said in previous pods about I really don't have any confidence in the political systems and structures we've got and the political class to actually prevent climate change now. And it would maybe the best thing is to focus on surviving climate change. And you think surely events like this would, you know, force them into action, and things like massive tree plantings programs, like you said, and try to redesign so we can cope with these things. Like you mentioned, forest fires. I bet that's not something that we ever thought we'd really need to deal with as a major thing in Scotland. So I doubt they'll get the big planes that drop thousands of gallons of water, like you see in films and, you know, in places like America and Australia, you know. So it's things like that we need to plan for, proper contingency planning. But as we're just coming through a pandemic, shows that our political system is completely incapable of proper contingency planning as well. And that was something that scientists always said was going to happen. There was always going to be some kind of pandemic at some stage. And when it came round, we were scribbling a plan in the back of a bag packet. We had no idea what to do. And it's going to happen the same with climate change. How many massive forest fires will rip through the country before they finally came up with a decent plan to deal with forest fire? How many towns are going to flood before they come up with a coherent plan to deal with, you know, annual flooding event? It's depressing is what it is.
You see them talking as well about drought and wanting to pipe the fresh water from Scotland down to England. That's their idea of a contingency plan. Instead of trying to mitigate what's happening, try to work on retaining water, how to stop wasting water, maybe stop using it for stuff that they don't need, like discharging raw sewage in the fucking ocean. Like there's so many different schemes that the government could be implementing. We could be looking more at carbon capture. We could be being more ferocious on low emission zones. We could be really amping up the electric transport system. Like,
can you stop coming up with these really good ideas because you're going to disrupt the free market?
Oh yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Capitalism. Yeah.
And just to there's been a fantastic tweet that I've just seen and I have actually laughed at it. There's Liz Truss's Liz for Leader campaign. I think they've deleted it now, but somebody captured it before it got deleted and basically says, thank you for putting your trust in me. I'm ready to hit the ground from day one.
Hit the ground from day one. Love it.
I'm taking back that whole competent thing I said. So.
There is no competence there.
So let's move on to the next topic. Before that, a word from our sponsor.
Our sponsor this week is Sense of Nature Pet Service, based in central Scotland. Sense of Nature gives you a hands-on, personalised experience with a variety of exciting creatures, from snakes and skunks to tarantulas and turtles. Sense of Nature has something for everyone. They offer sensory sessions, one-to-one and group sessions, educational encounters for children of all ages, and they are available for private events upon inquiry. Animal welfare is at the forefront of everything they do, and if appropriate, a risk assessment can be carried out at no additional cost prior to your booking. To get 5% off your next booking with Sense of Nature, quote Holyrood Ungagged 5 at time of booking. To contact Sense of Nature, you can do so by email on sense sense.ov.nature.inquiries@outlook.com. You can also find them on most social media platforms by searching for Sense of Nature.
The House of Commons descended into chaos this week. Speaker Lindsay Hoyle ordered the removal of former SNP MPs Neil Handley and Kenny McCaskill after both refused to sit down in protest at the Prime Minister's refusal to agree to a second independence referendum. Mr Handley and Mr McCaskill have now been suspended from the House of Commons for 5 days. Brian, did you see this? What was your thoughts? What did you think?
I did see this, but I would probably prefer just to see Neil Handley and Kenny McCaskill be suspended for Parliament until the next general election, to be honest, because they'll be coming back after that. But anyway, that aside, and my disagreements with these particular MPs, I thought it was quite strange that there was just that these two MPs coming up with this idea, and I don't think it was always going to be this kind of one day wonder that would be like, oh, you know, this has happened and blah blah blah, but then by the next day it's just totally forgotten about. I mean, you know, it was like a wash on Twitter about this particular incident, and then it was gone. So for that reason, it hasn't really served its purpose. We've had an internal discussion, and you know, I've been reading quite a lot on Twitter about, you know, basically should the SNP MPs, you know, be kind of partaking in sort of actions that would disrupt the functioning of Westminster and the House of Commons and things like that. And it's a really interesting discussion that I've seen online, mixed views about it, and people saying that, you know, the SNP will just be seen as, you know, being problematic, and it'll just fuel the hatred towards the SNP MPs by, you know, the general establishment, and people supportive of the idea, some people supportive of it, but it would need to be consented by the membership and all these different things. So I think that it is really, really interesting. I mean, me personally, I would love to see the House of Commons being completely grounded to a halt because the SNP is basically not being heard, and we're having to, because it's amazing how the sort of context just completely gets changed, because now we're not talking about, oh, it's terrible, you know, Scotland has elected a pro-independence majority in Holyrood and they're not getting the referendum. Now we're talking about, is it okay for the Scottish Government to go to the Supreme Court to ask if it's okay to hold a referendum? And then it's almost like, yeah, but then, and you know, is it wrong that the SNP decide to run a general election on one issue? Well, if we had a proper democratic process, we wouldn't have to be doing, the SNP wouldn't have to be doing all these different things. So it's just, I think we're just in such a bizarre place where it's like, you know, oh, you couldn't run a general election on a single issue, and you're like, well, can you just give us the referendum and then we won't? Like, it's just bizarre. And then also with these Tory leadership candidates, it's very much, no, it's once in a generation. But then, of course, nobody actually sets out what generation is, and the only legal reference to it is in the Belfast Agreement, and it's 7 years, and we've passed that. So that's always quite interesting. And Penny Mordaunt was saying that basically the issue was settled. So I think it's really good for Scotland to hear that the MP for Portsmouth North has decided that the constitution of Scotland is settled. So we're basically in this really bizarre place, and the establishment is very much, and this includes the Labour Party and the Lib Dems and basically a lot of the parties that are in the House of Commons, is very much like, well, you had your vote and that's it, and you know, we'll maybe ask you again in 20 years time or 30 years time, and so we're going to inflict these future Tory governments on Scotland, even though we continually don't vote for them. It's just, we're just in such a bizarre place, and I think something does need to happen, and I think there's definitely opportunity for the SNP MPs to start disrupting processes, because I think it would actually be viewed quite positively. But I understand there's issues around consent, getting it from the membership or the electorate or whatever it is. And if there is a general election coming, which I don't think there will be, because the Tories won't want to lose their majority or their positions in government, then the SNP should definitely put that in their manifesto to say, this is something we could do, and you know, and people can support that or not support it.
Deborah?
Well, I was watching the, you know, Parliament TV when the incident occurred with the aforementioned members. I didn't even know what had happened. I was just like, why is Lindsay Hoyle so raging? Like, he was overly annoyed about it. I thought it was quite an extreme reaction from the Speaker of the House. He's been quite rubbish as a speaker. I had much bigger hopes for him when he first started, but
he just looks like an angry teacher.
Yeah, that like pure checking everybody all the time, except the Tories. Like,
I did like the moment when he says, "Well, don't remember. I will be forced to name you," and then he turns to the side and goes, "What's his name?"
I like that. That was extra shade.
Can't name me if you don't know who I am.
I agree with what you said, Brian. The actual protest, what was it? It was a flash in the pan. Mm-hmm. They had threw their toys at the tram and then went outside to get applauded by Christopher McElhenney. Did we ever agree on how we were going to?
Chris McElhenney.
McElhenney. Chris McCook.
Who knows? Who cares?
I think strategically, as David's mentioned before on the pod, SNP MPs doing a concerted effort of one, standing up, breaking the rules, and then getting ejected, and then another standing up, like, and that just going on through the day and frustrating process. That I could kind of get behind that, but you have to ask the membership because it's I don't know, would it be? Because it would just be a strategy rather than a sort of policy. Maybe they should just do it. Maybe Mary Black should just get in about the House of Commons with a Sharpie.
Just write stuff on the benches.
Maths is shite. As a throwback reference, not many folk will get that.
I mean, obviously, this was my entire idea. I had no idea that Kenny and Neil listened. I'm guessing they listened selectively, considering some of the things said about their party. I think the execution was quite poor, because you're right, Deborah, when you're watching it, it wasn't clear what exactly was happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not 100% sure that it was a protest, or was it a spontaneous thing, or did they just get into an argument? So in that sense, it was quite unclear. And if you're going to make a protest, you want to be clear of what you're protesting and why. Also, the fact that there's only two of them, it is very limited, because they're banned now and there's not much they can do for 5 days or whatever. And I think they actually had to send the sergeant of arms to like escort them out. Mm-hmm. Now, if it was an SNP MP and made sure he was right in the middle of all, 48 or some members who don't, I'm not saying they get into a fight, but if they just, passively make it difficult for them to get to the person that they throw out, you could prolong that for a lot longer than what this happened for. Mm-hmm. And like you said, when you've got that many MPs, you can keep this going indefinitely, and by the time you get to the last one, the first people I'm going to throw in it will be more than ready to come back in again.
Mm-hmm.
So in all, I'd put it down to right idea, wrong people.
Wrong execution as well. Like, it just, it didn't make it, I didn't know what was happening. And I was watching it. So.
And the thing is as well that we take a keen interest in politics. We follow what's going on, and even we still couldn't quite piece it together. So if you're just somebody who's not really engaged in politics, or you're quite a passive observer or whatever, you're not really going to understand the motives behind it and what it was. Because they were interviewed when they went out, and that's when Chris Mick, whatever his name is, was just like standing in his shorts clapping, like trying to make it look like he was some kind of random supporter in the street, but actually he's
trying to be a crowd.
Yeah, well, he's used to that, isn't he? So
some tea.
I know, exactly. It is piping hot and it's ready for tea. But there was just no clear message when they came out. It was more like a rambling that I think actually puts a lot of people off, when they're like, Scotland's not being listened to, and it's undemocratic and stuff like that. Well, you should just be able to communicate that really clearly and just say, this is why we done it. This was the process we went through. This is what we've tried to do already. So we felt that this was our only, way out of this, or whatever it might have been. I think that there was a real opportunity today at PMQs, with it being Boris Johnson's last session of PMQs, that the SNP could have done something, and I think it would have been quite a dramatic one, because of Boris Johnson finally not going to be in the House of Commons as Prime Minister anymore. So I just think there's just so much more opportunity. I'm like, come on guys, do something. It's like every single question is about some kind of weird worded way of saying, why can't Scotland have its referendum? which is important, and I totally get that. But let's just jazz it up a bit. Do you know what I mean? Let's just get really stuck in and grab some headlines.
Yep. We'll keep watching. This might be, because I think most independent supporters seemed like they liked this kind of thing. I don't know if you've got that same impression. Certainly before when the SNP walked out that time, that really energised a lot of people.
Yes.
That was more effective though than guys sort of arguing over a parking spot, and you just came in the car park, don't know what's going on, and the traffic wardens come along and said, Bethy is bugger off. Mm-hmm. That was exactly what occurred, because I know it was something to do with independence, but...
Yeah, also if you've planned this and you know it's going to happen, the first thing that should happen once you walk at the chambers, you should walk to the nearest microphone and lay out your narrative to the press. I've still not actually seen either of them speak about this. Maybe I've missed it, but
yeah, I missed a lot of the coverage because I've muted certain words that so I don't see certain things appear. Yeah, so things like that, and their leader, things like that. I don't see anything about these people, and it's a wonderful life.
I'm just glad they're listening to me. I'm glad somebody is, because even my wains don't listen to me. So.
Oh, I'll listen to you.
Thanks, Brian.
I don't.
On to our final topic of the podcast. It's been quite a week for Keir Starmer, and a week where the Tories lost the leader and are engaged in some Tory-on-Tory violence in terms of debates and criticising each other. Keir Starmer decided to pose at a Holocaust memorial and use it as a prop in his political campaigning. He ruled out working with the Lib Dems and the SNP in the event of some kind of hung parliament. He dropped a commitment to keeping the NHS free of privatisation. And on top of all that, the Ford report dropped, which revealed concerning levels of racist and misogynistic behaviour amongst Labour staffers who are associated with his wing of the party. Brian, how's things going with Keir Starmer, do you think?
Well, generally, when it comes to Keir Starmer, it sometimes feels like everything's really uneventful, but this has been a pretty eventful time for Keir Starmer. Not all of it very positive. And just to take a bit of a check here as well, that basically how horrendous things are for the Tories, right? The Tories are basically ripping themselves apart, and in public, in debates, on the telly, ripping each other apart. And Keir Starmer's only like 10 points ahead. And that, in UK politics where we are, is really surprising. That famous line from James O'Brien saying that if we had any other leader, we'd be 20 points ahead. That kind of thing. But I just think that, you know, for context is, okay, they're ahead, and a lot of polls at the moment are predicting that Labour would win a majority, but just... So, you know, if you've only just got a majority, that's quite difficult to maintain a government and get certain legislation through. And especially if you decided to say, well, I'm not going to work with the Lib Dems, I'm not going to work with the SNP. And to be honest, I think I would be just as angry as I was at the Lib Dems in 2010 if Labour were in a position to form a minority government but chose to, you know, the opportunity to work with the SNP and whatever other party to create a majority to block the Tories out, and they didn't do it. But with the terrible voting system that we've got, it's the only way that we could prevent the Tories from getting in. But of course, there's so many things with Westminster that we need to change, and we don't really want to be in Westminster anymore, whatever. But just within the context of things the way it is. The Ford report, what's most fascinating about this is how long it took for it to be published. It basically, you know, was just hush-hushed for ages. I mean, the work on this started, I think it was way back, like before 2020. So it's only just coming out now. And I've had a chance to look through some of the key findings, and I've looked at some of the coverage, and this really came about because Navarro Media, they basically got leaked messages and published this as a story, and this is where it all started. So for them, I think it's a fantastic thing that it has come to the forefront, but I'm not surprised by any of the outcomes. You've got, you know, you see people really, in my opinion, really well-respected MPs, people like Diane Abbott and things like that, experiencing this sort of behaviour from people who've meant to be on the same team to get them into power, undermining them, the use of prejudice, language, and all these different things is just absolutely horrendous. And I mean, so the sort of centre and the right of the Labour Party are sort of trying to spin this to be that it's not as bad as, you know, the conspiracy theories we're seeing and all this kind of stuff. But actually, it's the worst thing for them is that sort of, oh, Labour's a broad church sort of argument doesn't really wash anymore, because it's clear that there's a clear divide within Labour. Mm. And it's like a struggle for power, like over the Labour Party and over certain policies and things like that. And of course, if the Labour Party backed proportional representation, the Labour Party and probably the Tories wouldn't exist in the same form as they do now. They would probably split off into a couple of different parties. So actually, they're just creating their own problems. It's the most bizarre situation. So, you know, if you are a centrist and you genuinely don't want to work with these people who are progressive and inclusive, then, you know, create a system where everyone can break off and actually have parties and actually have a choice when it comes to a general election, rather than having to, oh, you know, I would really like to see a Green government or whatever it might be, but I'm going to have to vote for Labour or the SNP because I don't want the Tories to get in. I mean, that's just how pathetic things are. So yeah, not a very good week for Keir Starmer in general. Just again, another cringe performance at PMQs today. It's just every time. And it's like, and then you've got like Rachel Reeves behind him, like really laughing away at his jokes. And it's just, oh, it's just cringe. So yeah, sooner the better that that Labour maybe has as a new leader. That would be quite a positive thing also.
But we know it would just be someone of a similar ilk as Keir Starmer, because they have now stitched up the rules to make sure only someone from that centrist right wing section of the Labour Party can get in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ruling out working with the Lib Dems, that is about setting a signal saying we are committed to first past the post. Despite mm-hmm. within this report that, you know, it shows that the sort of apparatus and the people that are in control of that in the Labour Party are rotten to the core.
Mm-hmm.
And in a different system, most of the activists that recognise that would have walked, and they would have formed another party.
Mm-hmm. But
that gets you nowhere in this system, because it's really a two-party system, even though there is a couple other parties that force their way in there. First past the post only works in a two-party system.
Yeah, and we've seen that with the independents. The independent MPs for Change or something like that, or whatever they were called? Remember that? Yeah. That block that was created and then just was basically flushed away.
I feel like Keir Starmer shouldn't just be 10 points ahead. He should be miles ahead.
Absolutely.
Like, he's missing the open goal. And he's so lackluster. Like, he's just so bland. It's big potato face. Like, there's nothing, I find nothing that he says inspiring or charismatic. And even when he's slagging the Tories, it's like it's hardly a dig. You know what I mean? It's like a wee sort of casual remark. He doesn't get tore right in when he should, and it's frustrating. Maybe that's what happens when you're a sir. Maybe you become more reserved. But he was also a polis, wasn't he? So
he dropped the commitment to keep the NHS privatisation there mm-hmm. this week, and
yeah,
it's just the latest in a ludicrous long line mm-hmm. of things that he promised when he was running for leadership that he's just been in.
Yeah,
and then he's got the cheek to actually try to take a moral high ground with Boris Johnson. Mm-hmm. How is it any different? He's a liar. He lied through his teeth, and he knew he was lying. He knew that, you know, Corbyn was very popular in the mm-hmm. With the membership. If it was up to the membership, Corbyn would have continued as leader. So he knew he had to say things that would appeal to them,
mm-hmm.
but at no time did he have any intention of going through with this. Yeah. He knew as soon as he was in, he was pulling the ladder up, changing the system, so that these people, the ones that are going out and delivering the leaflets and canvassing for to get these Labour MPs elected, that they wouldn't get to have a say.
Yeah. Well, the Labour leader that doesn't support strike action, I mean, mm-hmm. come on. You're right, Brian, it's absolutely ludicrous. This, and if there was a sort of breakaway Labour Party, it would be a Jeremy Corbyn-style party, I think. It would be totally left, and you would just be left with a centrist, slightly less worse than the Tories, Labour Party. I don't know how Labour folk in Scotland are sort of, what's the word, squaring their peg? So what's the word? What's that phrase when you're trying to
square the circle?
Square the circle, I don't know how they're trying, how they are dealing with the situation, to be honest, and when so many in Labour are still totally ignoring the Scottish constitutional question. Like, they don't want to even address it, so I don't know how you can get behind Keir Starmer and any sort of Prime Minister bid at a general election with his really unambitious sort of plan. Like, there's nothing, like, can tell me one thing that's come out of Labour that's ambitious or progressive right now that they're going to do.
Well, Deborah, actually, I don't know if you've been following this, but the Tories actually adopted Labour's call for a windfall tax on the oil and gas companies. But you know what the funniest thing about it is? They actually made it, to some extent, actually more than what Labour had originally asked for. So that shows you that you're probably not a very radical Labour Party.
It's not exciting. I mean, I thought you were going to say it was a green policy.
I mean, Scottish Labour are a strange sort of beast in the sense that, you know, a lot of their more progressive sort of members left, you know, either before, during, or just after the last independence referendum and moved across to like most of the SNP. Then you had a kind of new wave of sort of more left-wing people that, you know, that were brought in by Corbynism that then joined. So you have this, in the Scottish Labour, you've got the kind of long-term right-wingers that outlasted the more progressive members, combined with this new crop of left-wingers that they seem to just be a bit more open to independence, but are still sort of locked out, I think, of the decision-making to actually make a difference. And the kind of traditional right-wingers are just slamming that door shut completely. And
so it'd be like the old guard, just shifting.
And a lot of organisations, you talk about the old guard, is like, well, they'll move on and the kind of younger ones will come in, but that'll not happen. They'll cling on to power to the point. The sort of Corbyn wave that moved into Scottish Labour, a lot of them have already started moving on, I think, anecdotally. But I mean, we did have some decent Labour MSPs from that tradition. I don't know what the long-term future will be in Labour. Or...
And in a way, it is a little bit frustrating to see some really good people in Labour just stay with the party and not be as vocal as they really should be. There is some really good representatives out there who's been sort of diplomatic around the question of independence. They don't support it, but like, we can't keep ignoring this. It's not going to go away. But then, of course, for me personally, for anyone who remains in Labour at the moment and not calling out, relying on Conservative votes in councils, and then even one of the Labour MPs on Politics Live, like, actually bragging about the fact that they had suspended two councillors from Edinburgh because they basically wouldn't vote alongside a deal for support from the Conservatives over the SNP because we don't work with them. So we're sort of framing it now where in some people's eyes in Labour that it's actually worse to work with SNP as it is over working with the Tories. And that is just... it just completely undermines everything that Labour says it is. And it's not even, and it's not what Labour is, it's what Labour says it is. And even now we're just in a farcical position, I think, particularly with Scottish Labour. And it's a real shame because there is some good people in that party, and they could bring around some really good, radical, positive change, but they won't. And that's sad in itself.
On that downbeat note, I think we're right to end today. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you everybody out there that's listening. If you've enjoyed this, you can find previous podcasts at leftungagged.org, and you can find some written articles there as well. And our sister podcast, we'll get the monthly podcast from World Beat with George Collins from North America. And you've also got the monthly Talking Sense podcast with Kat and Erin. If you've got anything you'd like us to talk about on Holyrood, you can tweet us at _ungagged, hashtag HolyroodUngagged, or you can send us an email, ungagged@gmail.com, put Holyrood Ungagged in the subject line. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you use. And once again, thank you guys, thank you listeners, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
See you later. Bye.